Small Business Bodyguard. Riftaccounting.com.
Paul Andrews with the Business Bunker.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker Show on Kent Business Radio and channelradio.co.uk. And it's Tuesday the 4th of July with me, Paul Andrews, and the stonkingly gorgeous Jules Serkin.
Hello.
I've got a couple of tweets I want to read, and then we've got two fantabulous guests that we want to talk to. I've had a tweet from the Stove Hub. And they say, can we have a Business Bunker shout out, please, Vanilla Whip? Are you a culinary genius? Of course I am. Of course I am.
What was it you cooked for them at that intention?
Seared Asian sesame tuna.
Yeah, that sounds really nice.
It was nice, yeah, even if I say so myself.
With a rack cloth or without the rack
cloth? I spread my seeds everywhere.
Do you?
Yeah.
Oh dear, that's not working for me. Sesame seeds. Okay.
Where have we gone? See, you've distracted me now. What did they want? Right. Have you got a winning hot canapé recipe? Listen to this. You need to listen to this.
Yes.
Would you like to go to the Kent County show? There's one day to enter, Jules.
Oh.
Yeah. So you can win two tickets to the Kent County show on the 7th to the 9th of July by contacting them with a hot canapé recipe.
Ooh, that sounds good.
That seems to be the deal. So give them a follow on the Twitter, The Stove Hub. Give them a follow and you can find out all about it and you can potentially win two free tickets to the county show.
Brilliant.
What's not to like?
It's always a good show, that.
Yeah.
It is.
Absolutely.
I think Farmer Charles will be there, of course.
Charles Tassel.
Yeah.
He will indeed.
Always worth it.
He's always there. Yeah.
He's a judge.
No, he's a farmer.
He's a judge and a farmer.
Oh, I see.
Another good...
I see what you did there.
Yeah, he is a judge and a farmer.
Okay.
Not a mayor, though.
No, absolutely. You're a mayor.
A nightmare.
Oh.
Listen, talking of summer, Paul Andrews,
yeah.
Summer's arrived, apparently,
has
they
it?
Say. And they say...
And you can tell how.
Yes. Listener, he's wearing, honestly, there is a picture out on my timeline, a very fetching Beach Boys sort of thing. He's got a spring in his step. Anyway, Hotel Campanile, Dartford. Did I read this?
Yes.
It's a barbecue-style buffet. I haven't read that bit, have
no.
I? Enjoy chicken, sausages, burgers, fish and side salads while overlooking the lake.
Vegetarian, is it? Then?
From the hotel's sunny patio area. Each attendee will leave with a cooling summer treat. That means they'll tip a bucket over your head, probably. Take the opportunity to put your business in the spotlight. Highlight its products, services and how these can help other businesses. Make new contacts, generate new leads and share ideas with fellow business people. It's on the 20th of July, 11:30 to 1 p.m. at the Hotel Campanile in Dartford. To book, please go to kentinvictachamber.co.uk/events or go on to kentbusinessradio.co.uk.
Fantastic. I had a tweet from Swale Means Business and they say, hi Vanilla Web, could we have a Business Bunker shout out for our Swale cybercrime event, which is tomorrow morning in Sittingbourne? Now, they have given me a link to it, but it's quite a long link, so you won't remember it, even if I could read it all out.
No.
So the easiest thing to do is to follow them on the Twitter and find out about their event, cybercrime event, tomorrow. And their Twitter handle is Swale Means. All one word, Swale Means. M-E-A-N-S. Swale Means. Give them a follow. Find out about their Swale cybercrime event tomorrow morning in Sittingbourne.
Of course, very apt for cybercrime. Look at what happened to BA and a few others. Who else has been cybercrime? Quite a few.
NHS.
Yeah,
House of Commons.
Because I was in
anybody.
I was in Africa, but it was all happening, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Everybody's been hit.
So very, very big, that one.
Yeah.
Shall I read another one or not?
You can do one more, and then I want to talk to Simon, and then I want to talk to Veronica.
Sales negotiating skills and techniques. Mm-hmm. How you win more sales and with a higher price. This is a 3-hour masterclass that transforms the way you negotiate sales and counters the negotiating tactics of customers and clients, especially professional buyers. You achieve more profitable sales without ever risking the order with Mike Kingston. Now, Mike is going to be speaking on Wednesday the 5th of July at 1:30 to 4:30 in Kings Hill near Maidstone. It's only 37 smackaroonies plus VAT. And it's for the full masterclass details, you need to go to masterclasseskent.co.uk. But again, it's on the 5th of July at 1:30 to 4:30 and it's with Mike Kingston. He's got loads of letters after his name, which will go on for an hour if I read them all out.
Now, that's just writing.
But, he's got lots of letters after his name. You know, his qualifications.
Oh, I see. I see.
Please keep up.
I thought you just couldn't read it.
Yeah, you're far too chirpy. Masterclasseskent.co.uk, 5th of July, 1:30 to 4:30, if you need to know about sales.
Fantastic. Thank you for that, Jules. It's an absolute pleasure to welcome back onto the Business Bunker Show, Mr. Simon Pollard. Hello, Simon.
Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. My friend, thank you for joining us. I'm trying to remember how long ago it was you were on last, but we were certainly in Dimchurch when you were on.
We were. The roads down there are great.
Yeah. Mm. Well, you're a bit of a biker, aren't you?
I'm a lot of a biker.
Yeah. And those roads are quite good for that, aren't they, across the marsh?
They are. Just stay upright.
Yeah.
Well, that's the studio where we used to have porcupines coming in and all sorts Fred when we were live. Yeah, they just used to come in and
English
mount my leg, porcupine. As I remember.
Exactly.
Brilliant.
Yeah, Fred used to mount my leg. You remember? It was quite prickly.
I don't think we need to know that, do we?
It's just a nature.
Do we really need to know that?
It's a nature program.
I mean, he was a porcupine with issues.
Yeah.
Let's just leave it at that, shall we?
The funny thing was, his owner thought it was really sweet. He says, oh, don't worry, it's just mounting your leg. No, don't worry, you know.
And he nicked all the Garibaldis.
Yeah, he did.
Exactly. Anyway, enough of that.
Simon's earthy. He gets that.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, so, Simon, when you were on last, though, you were telling me that you were thinking about writing a book.
I'm not thinking about it
anymore. You've done it.
No, I have done it.
Yeah.
It exists. Look, I'm going to hold it up so you can see it through the microphone.
Exactly, But before we talk, we're going to talk about your book, obviously, but just to remind people what it is that you do, Your Simple Life is the name of your company.
Yes.
So tell the listener what it is that you do.
Simple Life, wild-friendly garden design and landscaping and consultancy.
Right.
So we do a lot of. I do a lot of talking.
Right.
And we also design gardens, and we put them all in.
Right.
And if you really want us to, we'll even look after them.
Wow.
So that's fencing, that's paving, decking, planting, wildlife-friendly planting, bird houses, insect houses, animal houses, all that kind of thing.
Mm.
That makes our lives better, and, of course, it also makes wildlife lives better.
Yeah, you're very active with Wildlife Trust as well, are you not?
We are indeed corporate members of the Kent Wildlife Trust, and we also sponsor their Wild About Garden scheme.
Right. Just give us an overview, just for those people that don't know, you know, that live in urban conurbations or whatever. Tell us a little bit about wildlife gardens and what you mean by that.
A wildlife-friendly garden, for me, is a garden that has as many niches, as many habitats to support as many animals as possible,
right,
providing them with not only a place to live, but also somewhere to eat,
right,
to drink.
Mm.
I also need to be able to get in. You know, it's
and
all
out.
Right for things that fly around, but hedgehogs, for example, can't get into our gardens.
They can climb, though, hedgehogs. I used to rear them from babies, and they can climb.
Generally not over 6-foot fences.
Maybe not. Depends on their claws.
They could parachute in. Oh, no, they couldn't. No.
But you need...
Exactly.
But you need a nice flat water bowl for a hedgehog, don't you?
Nice flat water bowl, but you also need to have fencing, which has got 4-inch holes in it. Because it doesn't matter how fast they can run, it doesn't matter how hard their heads are, when they hit those concrete gravel boards, they just stop.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to be able to let them in. And hedgehog numbers have crashed.
Yeah, they have. Very rarely see one where I live anymore.
That's part of the reason. Foxes is another one. But it's not just one hole in one hedge.
Mm.
You need to get the whole community together. So I reckon that's a really good excuse for a barbecue for the community.
Mm.
Chance to have a drink, talk to each other, and then get somebody like us or to come along and just make you one hole in one side of each part of your garden.
Right.
Otherwise, it's a drop in the ocean.
Right.
It's a good excuse for a party and a good cause.
The rabbits are doing that for me.
They go under.
Yeah. They built tunnels and all kinds, flyovers. My rabbits are just mad.
Badgers are even worse.
I've got a badger that lives in my garden, and he growls at me now and again
And you've got Mr. Pheasant that pops
I've got the I'm lucky. I do have a wild garden, and the reason I have a wild garden is because I'm so lazy. I've not gone out there, cut the grass or anything else, and I've got holes all over my fences because I never mend them or anything. I just don't do anything. So I'm really lucky. I got wildebeest, I got giraffes, everything I got in my garden.
Well,
when
we came back from Italy after honeymoon earlier this year, we had to reconvert our wildlife-friendly garden back to from the wild garden that it had become.
Right.
We were over 3 weeks, and all the planting went from sort of 3 inches to 3 foot.
Right.
But that's nice to leave a patch of nettles and some longer grass, perhaps.
Nettles are fantastic.
They are. And nettles, even to absolutely. Eat, nettles are very good for you.
I'm partial to a nettle, you know.
Yeah, they're very, very good for you.
They're good, again, good for things like butterflies, like peacocks, like red admirals, because the caterpillars will feed on the stinging nettles.
Yeah.
It's not just putting out the food for the adults, the pretty things that we see, but it's giving the caterpillars food and a place to start off, because if you've got no caterpillars, then you've got no butterflies.
Mm.
I've just done something terrible, Simon. I have put little spikes up on my arbor, or whatever you call it, those wooden things. You've probably got a gardening name for it. And because the pigeons were...
Are you talking about a gazebo?
Something like that that goes across. Is it an arbor or is it gazebo?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Wooden things that go across.
Go across what? A bridge?
Well, no, my patio.
Oh, so right,
the
okay.
lady next door feeds the seagulls. This is what you're going to have, Laura, when you move to Tankton. She feeds the seagulls.
Veronica.
And Veronica. What did I say?
Laura.
Oh. I've been talking to Laura.
Yeah.
So she's seagulls like and pigeons. So the pigeons have got out of hand. Seagulls are bad enough, but the pigeons are out of hand. So they poo on everything, as you know. So we've got these little pigeon spikes. I felt really bad, but the sparrows can still perch on the edge. And it's really changed. We can actually sit on our patio now without being pooed upon every minute. Because pigeons breed like pigeons.
Yeah, if you think pigeons are bad, try ducks.
Ducks?
The ducks
make
in
a mess.
My, the they ducks in my garden are a nightmare.
But they're
don't
lovely.
Don't forget, though, that ducks and pigeons both taste nice.
Yeah, absolutely.
In a pie.
Yeah.
In a pie, fried up with a bit of onion.
Yeah.
It's good stuff. It smells.
Absolutely.
So what do you think about people paving over their front gardens for... driveways, because that gets my goat a bit. Does it get your goat, Paul?
It's interesting, isn't it? While Simon thinks about how he can diplomatically answer that question, I know people that have started to put AstroTurf down.
I know.
Instead of it all.
That's
Veronica being one of them.
Veronica, no, it's got to go.
And I fully understand why people do that. You know, we have busy lives. You can't cut the road, yada, yada, yada.
Come on. But how long does it take to mow your lawn?
Don't tell me. I haven't got AstroTurf. I got, you know, you've been in my garden. Yeah. I mean, I've got jungle in my garden.
But you've got an electric mower, a sit-on, haven't you?
No, I haven't got a mower at all.
That's going to be me in my next home.
Well, you've got Simon. You've got Simon. So
I don't own a lawnmower of any kind.
Well, how do you cut your grass?
I don't. That's why it looks the way it does.
I don't remember it being that long.
No,
it's
have some
a meadow.
Yeah, but I have someone that comes in once a month and
there
just
you, are. You have a man
just takes the top off of it. Yeah.
But the new fashion, Simon will tell you about this, is to leave strips, isn't it, Simon?
Strips is certainly one option.
On the lawn.
But ultimately, if people are determined that they're going to go the paving route or the AstroTurf route, then I think we have a responsibility to put our planting around it and make it the most insect-friendly planting that we possibly can. I mean, there are reasons why people do or need or have to put in paving or turf. If that's the case, that's fine. But let's put in beds around them.
I was going to say, you know, I mean, no matter what your circumstances, even if you live in a flat on the 12th floor, you can do window boxes, you can do planters.
Absolutely.
You can do hanging baskets.
I have a planter.
Do you? She's redeemed herself. Really? You can come back in, Veronica. We'll let you
sorry,
in for the, back, the rest of the show.
The AstroTurf has got to go.
Well, but so many people are doing that now. Okay, I don't want to rush, but we are, you know, up against time here, and we've got lots of things to cover, and I want to hear about Simon's book. So
Good. Give
us a shout for the title of the book.
The title of the book is The Three-Year Pond and Other Absurdities, or Simon's Guide on How to Be Happy.
Right, okay. Now, it doesn't talk about ponds very much.
No, not much.
So what is it about? Tell us.
If you like, it's many things. Those people who reviewed it have struggled to some extent. But in the first instance, it's a guide on how to avoid the pratfalls and what to do about some of them when you start up in a business.
Right.
Because quite often we go into business and we're full of enthusiasm and energy and ideas, but we don't put any foundations under our business.
Mm.
And part of the book charts, the whole book charts, a three-year period through my life, through the business. And during that time, we got taken to court. Mm. We met one or two nightmare clients.
Can you tell us why you got taken to court? Are we allowed to know?
Yes, you are. I mean, it's there. It's written in the book. We built a large item of interior furniture for a lady, which she was very happy with.
And so you do interiors as well?
We used to back in the old days.
Okay.
She then decided that she wasn't very happy about it and asked us for her money back. And
okay.
There was a part of it where we agreed that it was correct and we should replace it. But part of it we thought wasn't. And we said no. And the lady took us to court. And there are a lot of bits and pieces that are described in the book. Ultimately, bottom line is, we are still here. And the lady has never been seen again, even though we lost. So that was one of the things that could have been avoided had we known more about what to do.
Sure.
And were you a member at the time of Checker Trade or any of those bodies?
I was a member of them then in the same way I am now. Not at all.
Okay. You're absolutely right, Simon. And as you probably know, I operate as an angel investor and I invest in businesses and I work as a business mentor. And one of the things that's driving me completely balmy at the moment is how many people are starting businesses without a business plan or business model or business idea underpinning it. And what I mean by that is they do things that they enjoy doing or they think sound interesting. But when you say to them, how are you going to make money at this? They go, don't really know. And they've not thought about the basics. And unfortunately, because the basics aren't very sexy, a lot of people don't think about it. But the reality of business life is you provide a product or a service and you provide it at a price that is more than what you paid for it. And it is that simple. But so many people can't do that and then wonder why they don't succeed. So I'm totally in tune with what you're saying. I love the sound of it.
So that's mm-hmm. if you like, one section.
Mm-hmm.
When we thought we had got the majority of problems out of the way, I mean, again, there was an employee we shouldn't have employed, cost us a lot of money.
Mm.
We put everything right, got everything sorted out, thought life was shipshape. My mother then decided to die. I then went through a divorce.
Mm.
And you keep going. So this is where the pond bit comes in. You kind of go down that slippery slide to the bottom, and you keep your head up, and you keep fighting, and you keep yourself together. And you start coming out the other side.
Hmm.
Now, having been through all that, and I'm still here, I'm talking, I've written a book. And I got married
to
again.
To the absolutely gorgeously lovely Gillian.
Absolutely most amazing woman on the face of this earth, who's probably not listening, but should be. And
she can listen again.
She can listen, probably with me later.
Yes.
With a glass of wine.
Yeah.
But when I've always held the fact that we need to be connected with nature.
Yep.
We've had a little bit of it earlier. And what the book actually does is it charts, if you like, the way that I've changed through those 3 years.
Mm.
And it charts the way that I've come to the thinking that I have now. And if you like, simple life for me is going to become a part of a much bigger ideal. I've got this idea for world domination, but I believe that we need to seriously think about our whole well-being. People talk about well-being and wholeness and all the rest of that, and I think they're missing the trick. So what we're looking to do here is to actually set up a centre which looks after those things that are there about our bodies, massage, diet, maybe Reiki,
the whole
into
person.
Meditation. But if we go a step further and say, okay, if we've got a fantastic place that we can actually be in to take all that on, then we've got a much more rounded solution. If you listen to guided meditations, they take you to an Eden, a paradise, somewhere that's fantastic, so that you can clear your head, be calm, straighten yourself out. Now, if you had an idea about how to put that in your own back garden, then you've not only got a place where you can cool it, you can chill out, you can reconnect, because after all, we all came from nature. We didn't get born with four brick walls around us.
Well, don't we always feel better when we step outside? Always. Whatever the weather,
I think there's a lot of people that actually don't. You look at house builds now, they are four brick walls with a path around the outside and there are no gardens.
Mm.
There's a lot of people out there who don't want to go outside, who are not happy and I think could be an awful lot happier if they actually took the step outside.
I think the issue here is, for me, there are lots of us, for one reason or another, that either can't afford or don't have the time or whatever, that may not have a garden of our own, or we may, as I said earlier, live in a high-rise flat. I don't think it's necessarily having and owning and maintaining a garden yourself. I think what people need is public space and wild space very close by that they can visit. So if you live in a block of flats, so you're not going to have a garden, the fact that there's a park or a meadow or, you know, a woodland walkway or something like that is crucial. And one of the reasons that I raise that is I got heavily involved in a debate online a couple of days ago with someone that was saying it's about time we scrapped the green belt and started building houses on it. Yeah. And I went, no, absolutely no. Not any chance ever that you should do that. It is just a stupid thing to do. But so, Simon, I'm conscious of the time and I don't wish to rush you because we want to talk about all of this. So you've actually written a book. You've actually published it. It's for sale.
Soon.
So how can we get a hold of this book?
Well, this is the important bit.
Yeah.
We have a book launch event on Wednesday the 19th of July.
Okay.
At 6 o'clock in the Tower House in Canterbury.
Right.
Runs for 2 hours. We are getting close to capacity, but if there are some spaces available, you can message me via Facebook and Twitter, or even just find the website. If you get in contact with us, there are spaces. Also, for those people who are on the other side of the county, the far over west side, the publishers, Herkimer, have actually also got a meet and authors event at Kings Hill Golf Course on Friday the 21st of July in the evening. I think that's an 8 o'clock kickoff. Mm-hmm. It will be available on Amazon as of Thursday the 20th of July. There is also a Kindle version, and there's going to be an audio version because I'm told when I read it, it's even better than when you read it.
Right.
In fact, I'm getting requests now for doing voiceovers. So that's
lovely to have a story read. Then
another
that's
potential.
Great. I love an audio.
So ultimately, we'd love to sell out. We'd love to have people queuing up at the doorways. But ultimately, if you come along to the book launch on the 19th, then you can buy the book £8.50 cash, and I'll sign it. And it'll be wonderfully nice. But it would just be great to see people.
Fantastic. Tell us where that's taking place again.
That's the Tower House in Canterbury. Fantastic venue. Got married there too.
Right.
And we'd just love to see you.
So is that the old jail?
It's the old Victorian Gothic-y building in the Westgate
Towers.
Okay. Gardens.
Lovely.
Our ministry is a stone's throw from the Towers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So please come along. Come along, say hello.
And what time was it?
That's 6 o'clock.
6 p.m. Wednesday the 19th of
Wednesday
July.
Wednesday the 19th of July.
Fantastic. Give us one more shout out for the title of the book.
Title of the book, The Three-Year Pond and Other Absurdities.
The Three-Year Pond and Other Absurdities by Simon Pollard.
Guide on how to be happy.
Good.
And by the way, the answer to that question is take responsibility for every single thing you do and the consequences of what you do, because then no one will come back and to you.
Cool. Simon, thank you so much for joining us. Very powerful message there. Read the book. Get along to the book launch in Canterbury at the Tower on the 19th of July.
On the 19th of July.
At 6:30.
At 6.
Now, you get it. It's fashionably late.
No, I'll be there at 10 to 6.
Yeah. Well, actually, she's fashionably early.
Yeah.
Simon, thank you so much for that. You can follow Simon on the Twitter at SimpleLifeLTD is his Twitter handle. Do give him a follow there and remind yourself of when that event is, and also the event for the publisher at the Kings Hill Golf Club on the 21st of
Friday.
July. Friday the 21st.
Meet the
Good. Simon, thank you for that. I'm going to read one tweet and then we're going to talk to our next guest. I've had a tweet from Chalk Circle Limited and they say, can we get a Business Bunker shout out, please? We're giving away these free. Listeners can enter via, and they give me some really long link. What they are spinners, though. They're giving hand spinners away.
They're going wild about it. Apparently, they're like gold dust.
Yeah, exactly. So the thing to do is to follow Chalk Circle on the Twitter. And their Twitter handle is Chalk Circle CC, and you can win a hand spinner. So do check that out. It's an absolute pleasure now to welcome onto the Business Bunker Show for the very first time the absolutely adorable Veronica Cook. Hello, Veronica.
Hello.
How are you?
Very well, thank you.
So we've got a literary afternoon for the second part of the show because... Veronica has recently completed her book and has had it published, and it's now available for sale. A completely different story and a completely different set of rationales. I know this is hard, and I know it's not particularly nice, but let's just touch on the background to the book.
Okay.
But then I want to focus. People can read the book to find out all the gory details of everything. I want to talk to you about the process of the book, but give us a bit of background first, Veronica.
Okay. I grew up with my parents addicted to heroin. I spent all of my childhood and early adult life living around my parents on drugs, and they became prolific drug dealers as well in northwest London.
Right.
So I spent a lot of years around that.
Can I ask you a question at that point?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean to sound facetious about this, but I just want to, you know, get a view of this. When we talk about drugs,
mm-hmm.
we tend to think of the music culture and hippies and all that kind of stuff. Is that the kind of culture that your mum and dad were involved in?
Yeah.
Yeah.
My mum and dad were hippies.
Hippies, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, and if you'd have met them in the early years, you would have thought they were lovely people, you know, just like anybody else.
Mm.
It was a shame, really, that they'd got caught up in such a destructive path. And, yeah. I think my story really is about highlighting the difficulties that children face when they're surrounded by that environment for a long time.
Do you remember what age you were when you realised that this was going on?
Probably around the age 4 or 5.
Right, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So very young.
So very young, you became aware that there was something not right.
Yeah.
Presumably, you didn't go, you know, you didn't know exactly what, presumably.
Well, I think children, they, you know, you get a lot of messages through body language.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you go out the door and you've got to go to school and you're told to be quiet, you kind of, you realise that this isn't the kind of environment that you're able to speak about.
Sure.
Socially, if that makes sense.
It does.
Are you an only child? Do you have siblings?
I have younger siblings.
Okay, so you were the oldest.
I was the oldest, yeah. There was a big age gap. So I was the only child for the first 8.5 years. So I spent those 8.5 years on my own in that environment, which was very difficult.
I'm sure.
Did you get support at all, or was anything picked up at school?
Nothing. No, nothing at all. Completely missed.
And what about grandparents?
I think they knew. I'm not sure. I can't really speak for them. They're not here today to sort of, you know, discuss that with me. Unfortunately, they've passed away and been gone for many years. But I think there was some kind of knowledge.
Mm.
Perhaps maybe some of them turned a blind eye.
Sure.
As well. Yeah.
And you probably find that they didn't want to face some of the issues themselves. So
probably.
They kind of, you know, it's called cognitive dissonance when people try to excuse things because they don't want to face what they're looking at. So for you, Veronica, a terrible situation to grow up in as a young child. Become aware of it at a very early age. If you don't mind me asking... How did you as a child react to your parents in terms of, you know, did you find yourself asking them to stop, or how did it unfold?
Well, I mean, I'm sure you can imagine a child loves their parents no matter what.
Absolutely.
And my mum and dad weren't horrible people.
Yeah.
You know, they were quite affectionate with me, loving with me.
Mm.
I admit, a lot of my emotional needs weren't always met,
right?
But I was always well kept, always clean and tidy.
Which is why people at school and things like that wouldn't necessarily pick it up.
Yeah exactly. Yeah. It wasn't the stereotypical sort of situation, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
People, when you talk about heroin addicts, you immediately have an image of someone on the street corner jacking up on the street.
So it was heroin?
It was heroin,
Both of them?
Both of them, okay. But it was hidden. It was hidden behind closed doors. The question again, sorry. Paul.
No. I was just kind of I'm trying to put myself in your situation as a 4, 5, 6-year-old child.
Yeah.
And having kids of my own, you know. And you know,
I adored my mum and dad.
Yeah.
I loved them. My dad was a real a really talented musician.
Yeah.
He supported 10cc before I came along. He had a wonderful music career ahead of him if he'd wanted to continue with that path. But unfortunately, drugs got the better of him.
So what were your coping mechanisms as a child? And can you remember how you coped?
I'd say for me, I always had a very big imagination.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd say that was probably my best coping mechanism.
So you'd spend lots of time alone in an imaginary world.
While they were in another room using. I'd get bored. I'd spend hours bored. So I'd imagine that I had an audience and I'd be performing and making up dance routines. So I became very creative.
Mm.
I think I took off after my dad. I got into music at the age of 11, 12 when he'd gone to prison and started to teach myself piano.
He went to prison?
Yeah, spent 3.5 years in prison when I was 10 years old and came out just before my 14th birthday.
Well, can you tell us?
My mum and dad my mum was alone, pregnant, with my youngest sister. I had a middle sister at the age of 2 at the time, and I was 10. My mum had a habit and had to continue to support that habit.
While she was pregnant as well?
While she was pregnant.
Okay.
So he'd gone into prison for dealing drugs, and my mum continued to do that while he was away for 3 years. To enable her to continue and carry on
with her usage.
Because she couldn't function without it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's a harrowing story. Mm. It really is. And there's so many questions and so many things. Mm. I want people to read the book more than, you know, try to get you to tell the whole story in 10 minutes, which you're never going to do anyway. Yeah. So we're just kind of highlighting some bits of this, but people will go and read the book because you need to read the book. Mm-hmm. Is there a point, did there come a point where you, because you've said multiple times that you loved your parents and quite right, and obviously you felt for them. But do you remember there coming a point when you thought, I can't be here?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. As I got into my sort of early 20s, becoming an adult, then you kind of see things from a different perspective. Growing up with other friends and seeing how their lives were very different to my lifestyle, and then obviously as the years went on and I became a mother, I started to question quite a lot, really, you know, why my mum and dad had put me in certain situations and
dangerous situations.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, there were times where I'd got to the point where throughout my life I tried to help them because I felt sorry for them and their addiction. Then I'd realized that this was probably never going to happen. And I became quite impatient with them in the end.
So what age were you when you started to actually fight
24.
Back?
Can I ask you a really horrible question?
Yeah.
You don't have to answer this at all. How come you didn't get dragged into it?
I almost did.
I'm sure you did.
I'm not going to make out that I was completely innocent. I had a little bit of experimentation,
of course,
with marijuana when I was younger.
Of course.
And I'm quite open and upfront about that because this is often where young people start out, you know, down that destructive path of drugs. Mm. You know, they'll start with something simple like marijuana, and before you know it, it leads on to other things.
It's just for me, a young girl in that environment, I find it staggering that you had the mental and physical and psychological power to resist.
Because I just always knew that my life was going to be different.
Right.
From a young age, I knew that when I was old enough and able to live my own life the way I wanted to live it, it was going to be
different
to that.
Do you think
I just wanted normality, stability, safety.
Do you think that was part of your creative imagination that
perhaps
saved you?
Because
you had that creative imagination.
It was an escape for me.
And you could see a better life in your head.
It was an escape for me. What kept me sane.
Veronica, did you at school latch on to, say, the dinner lady or a particular teacher? Was there anyone that you felt that you got anything
music from? My music teacher and my English teacher.
And later on, did they have an inkling that something was wrong?
I have no idea.
So you never told them?
Never told anybody.
Okay.
Never.
So I want to move forward now. You're a grown woman, you're an adult, you have your own family.
Yeah.
And you decided that you wanted to make your story known.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a whole heap of reasons for that, and we're going to explore some of them. But what was the, if you can pinpoint it, what was the impetus where you said, do you know what, I'm going to write a book?
Mm-hmm.
Can you remember that?
My mum died of cancer in 2012,
right,
caused by hepatitis C, which she'd been fighting for years.
Right.
I had a horrible fallout with my dad and my sisters around my mum's death, which led to me having a massive emotional breakdown.
Sure.
So I decided to seek help, and I got some counselling, and it was my counsellor who said, wow, you've gone through such a lot, you need to write it down.
Right. So in some respects, it was a cathartic type experience.
Yeah.
You're kind of unloading everything in your life onto a page.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I definitely had some hang-ups.
Yeah.
I was very angry as well at my dad.
Don't we all? But, but I can imagine you more
but
than
it's
most.
Not,
yeah.
It's not healthy. It's not healthy to hold on to all those negative feelings.
Mm.
So I knew I had to get it out in order for me to be able to overcome it. And it's been the best thing I've ever done.
Fantastic. I want to explore that a little bit now, if I may, because although I'm sure people out there will want to know more about the details of your story, they're going to have to read the book to find that out. Had you ever done anything like writing a book before?
Never.
Right. So you decided, your counsellor recommended that you think about something like this. You started the process. How did you feel when you started the process? And Simon wants to come in and ask a question, so do feel free, Simon.
Well, it's just a case of having written down a book, having been through some serious emotional turmoil. It's amazing when you put it on paper, and it just gives you a real chance to actually sort out your own thinking, to actually work out the priorities, to work out what it is that you did to cope, what you did to survive. And that just helps you rationalise things as a person. I mean, little things like when you're really, really upset, you'll wake up in the middle of the night, probably to have a wee or something, but it's that time of the night when your brain is on overdrive.
Absolutely.
And those little things become massive things, and the massive things become ginormous. And it's when you sit down and you write it and you look at it, you actually realise that not only is that a destructive thing, but it's the best time for positivity as well.
Yeah.
Because your brain is so powerful. Mm. But when you put it down on paper and you organise everything, and it gives you a clear channel almost for where to go as well as where you've come from.
Absolutely.
And that's brilliant. Well done.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So, Veronica, talk us very quickly through the process that you went through writing the book.
It took 3.5 years.
Right, okay.
Because there were experiences that I'd buried and hadn't been able to deal with.
Right.
And reliving those experiences and writing them down, I did find it very difficult. There were times where I'd wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning and stuff would be on my mind, and I'd write it down, and I'd go through every emotion you could imagine. But the feeling once I'd, because what I used to do is write a chapter and send it to my counsellor.
Well, I just want to ask what kind of counselling you have, what kind of therapy?
Was it cognitive behaviour therapy or something like that?
I just used to go and see a guy and chat to him.
Okay.
Yeah.
For how long a period?
I probably had about, say, a dozen sessions with him. prior to my mum dying, actually. And when she died, we'd already become friends at that point.
You mean friends with your mum or your counsellor?
With my counsellor.
Okay. Is that allowed?
I don't know.
I don't think it is allowed. I think... Well,
whatever.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, we became friends.
Yeah.
He's a lovely guy, actually. We remain very good friends right now. And if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't be sitting where I'm sitting right now today, to be honest with you. Obviously, my husband's had a massive... input in my life and helped me over the years, and my family that I now have, my children. But my counsellor was the person who was able to really help me get everything into perspective.
Brilliant.
I feel that I owe him quite a lot, really. So I used to send him my chapters and he would read through it and edit it. And yeah, it became 9 to 3.
I mean, it's a big book as well, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
It is a huge book.
Yeah.
Yeah. You could do some serious damage if you hit someone with that. Did you say it took 3.5 years to write?
3.5 years.
Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. It doesn't surprise me in the least. You've now got it on paper.
Mm-hmm.
It's down. It's a book. It's been published. We're going to talk about that in a moment.
Yeah.
How do you feel now?
Relieved.
Yeah?
Yep.
Okay. Is that relieved that you've got it out of your system?
Yep.
Relieved that you finished writing the book?
Yep.
Or all of those?
All of those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. No, it was a massive relief for me to get everything out. And and now I feel as though I've turned a negative experience into a positive.
Absolutely. I mean, you and I were talking off air before we came on air, and you were saying you've actually spent a lot of money doing this and you haven't written a book to make money. Obviously, you've written it to try to inspire people that find themselves in a similar situation to that which you were in, because as you kind of intimated all the way through talking about this, people in your situation are isolated.
Definitely.
If nobody else notices, you're all alone.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's your parents or your siblings or someone that you love very much, you don't go running to anyone else and tell them, do you?
Exactly.
You just don't, you know, because you realise that they're going to get into trouble.
Yeah, exactly, your whole life. Yeah.
So it's a double burden on both sides of it. So,
and even doing what I'm doing now still has those implications.
Absolutely.
You know, which I would never want to put my family in harm's way.
Yeah, absolutely.
And as much as I've had to step back from them
in
order to remain, to keep my... sense of reality, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
I still love them deeply.
Of course.
But I feel passionate now about helping other people that have gone through similar situations that I've gone through, and even children out there that are still living through this today. I don't think there is enough support for them and there isn't enough people sharing these experiences in order to help them come forward.
Absolutely. And I suspect one of the beauties of the book that you've written is those of us that aren't in your situation, having read the book, may see someone, based on what you've told us, that we realise is in that situation and can't do anything about it.
Yeah.
So that's one of the many beautiful benefits of what you've done and how you've tried to help other people.
Thank you.
Veronica, we could talk about this forever. It's such a powerful and moving and interesting story. Sadly, we're running out of time. Now, I want you to give us a shout out for the book. You're promoting the book. You've got loads of promotions going on. You're doing book signings and stuff like that, which is fabulous and lovely. So I want you to tell us about that. But start off by telling us, once again, the title of the book, how people can get it, and then if you want to mention anywhere that you're going to be anywhere soon, so that we can all come along and say hello.
Okay,
we'll do that. Yeah.
The name of the book is Veronica Hidden Harm, and it's published by Austin McCauley. It's available online through Amazon UK, Austin McCauley's site, waterstones.com, and it can be ordered through WH Smith and Waterstone stores. And I will be signing copies this Saturday on the 8th of July from 11 a.m. at Waterstones in Ashford.
Fantastic. And I know you've done a few signings already in Smiths and what have you, and you're going to be doing some more.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, we wish you all the luck in the world
with
the book. It's a very powerful and important book. I'm smiling here. There's nothing to smile about, really, is there? Apart from the fact that what you've done has moved you from a dark place mm-hmm. to a light place.
Exactly.
And that's really what yep. it's all about. But not only that, it's enabled you to help move other people in a dark place to definitely. A light place. So tremendous respect to you for what you've done, what you've achieved, and what you're continuing to achieve.
Lovely.
Veronica thank Cook, you. Thank you so much for joining us on the Business Bunker Show.
Thank
it's
you so much.
It's been an absolute pleasure
it's
to talk to you
and to meet you.
It's been an
absolute pleasure for me as well. Thank you so much for having me.
You're more than welcome, and we wish you much and continued success. Fantastic. Thank you, Veronica. We're fast approaching the end of the show. We have got Young Jules, that time in the show, where we...
go to the FSC.
Channel Radio News Update.
There is a free English qualification programme from Charlton Athletics. Turn your jingle off.
It always does that to me, too. It always does that to me twice, doesn't it?
It's a little boomerang.
Yeah.
Boomerang jingle. Yeah. I'll start again. Free English qualification programme from Charlton Athletic. Charlton Athletic Community Trust is a charity arm of Charlton Athletic Football Club. Has been given a European social funding to deliver English in the workplace in a bid to upskill the workforce. If you're interested in this opportunity for your staff, please contact Guy Robinson, Employment Development Officer, Kent County Council, and his email is guy.robinson@kent.gov.uk or ideally contact kentbusinessradio.co.uk.
Fantastic.
You can get up to speed with our PM practices. Are you a supplier or a retailer? It's important you're up to speed with resale price maintenance practices and compliance with competition law. New advice has been published to help businesses understand more about the issues after the Competitions and Markets Authority fined a domestic light fittings business £2.7 million for dictating online resale prices. See more details about RPM, go to gov.uk, Government Collections Resale Price, or go on to kentbusinessradio.co.uk.
Thank you. There's a women's networking event in association with 10 to 2. That's the lovely Andrea and Kirstine and the crew from 10 to 2 and the FSB. It's at the King's Head, which is 2 Western Road, Bessels Green, Seven Oaks. It's on Thursday the 13th of July, and it's from 9:30 a.m. until 11:30 a.m. If you'd like to book any of these things that we're talking about today, if you go to kentbusinessradio.co.uk and click on the FSB tab, you will find an entry for events where you can book your place.
Employment is up, say the FSB, and they say the number of people in employment has risen to almost 32 million, and the highest since records began. 15% of all people in work are self-employed, chiming with FSB's calls for the next government to back this growing group of entrepreneurs. The latest figures also show pay is down 0.2% in real terms. So we're calling, they say, for the employment allowance to rise to £4,000 to help small firms with wage costs. Hear.
Fantastic. There's an FSB Connect event in Ashford tomorrow, manana, 10:30 a.m. to 12:30 at the Farrier's Arm, and that's in Church Road, Ashford. And you can book by going once again to the FSB tab on the Kent Business Radio website. Have you got any more, Jules?
Not any more FSB, croaky, no.
I've got one more, which is the Crowded Places Protocol, which is new guidance has been issued for those aimed at who run a business with responsibilities for security in crowded places. And there's a website where you can go to find out some advice from the government on crowd management. It's gov.uk/government-news-crowded-places-guidance. So do check that out.
Channel Radio News Update.
And that brings us to the end of the Business Bunker Show once again for another week. I need to tell you what's coming up later on Channel Radio on this very station. At 4 o'clock, we have Natalie Benaig with the Kent Creative Live Show. And this week at 4 p.m., she has reggae band Ben Russell and the Charmers. And she also has Chris Dixon, who's the manager of culture at Ashford Borough Council.
Culture mush. Natalie Benaig also comes to Slope on Friday, you know. She's
Natalie.
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 Which is this Friday. 2 p.m. in Herne Bay.
You snuck that
Orlando's,
in, didn't you?
Yes.
So at 4 o'clock is the Kent Creative Live Show on Channel Radio. And then at 5 o'clock, we have the latest favourite, the man with the stripy socks, Mr. Craig Avery, with his celebrity interview and music show from 5 till 7. At 7 o'clock, we have Mr. Joey Whaler, and Joey has the Rockabilly Show.
I love Rockabilly.
Yeah, it's great. Joey Whaler with the Rockabilly Show at 7 o'clock. At 9 o'clock, we have I was Lord Kitchener's valet.
Were you?
I wasn't, but I was there. Because it's a show that focuses on that fabulous year of 1967.
What a year that was.
Absolutely. And then, of course, as always, on Channel Radio on a Tuesday, we finish off with...
It's Club Culture with Boy George.
1, 2, 3, get down!
Cool drum beat at the squidgy bass. I give you Vanilla Ace and it rhymes. That means I'm right on time. Welcome to Club Culture, where I control my very own dance universe. 1 hour or more of grooving delectables for your disco pleasure. I'm Boy George.
It's 1 hour of delectable, delicious dance music. It's Club Culture with Boy George on Channel Radio.
So as always, we finish up with the Club Culture show with Mr. Boy George at 10 o'clock on channelradio.co.uk. I'd like to say a huge thank you to today's guests, the Mayor of Maidstone, Councillor Malcolm Greer, all the winners of the Maidstone Business Awards, our two fabulous studio guests, Mr. Simon Pollard of Simple Life, and the absolutely gorgeous Veronica Cook. Thank you so much. My co-host, the stonkingly gorgeous Jules Serkin, will be back with another Business Bunker show next Tuesday at 1 o'clock. In the meantime, have a fabulous week. Bye for now.
Bye.
Paul Andrews with the Business Bunker.